Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 100th edition of New Mainers Speak. My guest is Parivash Rohani. She was raised in Guchan in the northeastern part of Iran, where she until she was 15. At the age of 18, she left Iran and moved to India for her safety because she and her family practiced the Baha'i faith and were thus targeted for persecution. Being unable to return to Iran, she eventually moved to the United States and has made her home in Maine since 1987. Welcome, Parivash.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Iran is in the news a lot, but I wonder what you can tell us about Iran that listeners might not otherwise know. What was it like to grow up there? Favorite things to see and do?
Yes, I just wanted to mention that I left Iran in 79 and my culture really froze in 79 because I never had the chance and opportunity to defrost this frozen culture. So really what I remember of Iran is 79 of Iran, which is very different than Iran today. So whatever I know is from the news media. So really my, idea of Iran is just like your idea of Iran. But till 2 years ago, when I decided to go to Iran after 30 years, I realized, oh my God, I'm going back to a country that really drastically has changed. So as I was preparing for my trip, I went and I got the longest overcoat, the darkest color of clothing. And one of my friends who usually go to Iran every year, I called her to inspect my clothing. And she said, Parivash, people in Iran are so fashionable. They wear colorful clothing, they wear makeup, they wear tight clothing. So anyhow, when I went to Iran, I was surprised by that she was right. And my mental picture of Iranian, because of the media, was very different than real life in Iran. So they were very fashionable. Really, even their veil was not that tight. You could see most of their hair and makeup. And their life, the Iranians really admire Americans so much. I mean, I cannot deny that I saw a slogan in Iran saying death to America, but day-to-day people really love Americans. And the young people, they want to do anything to be connected to some kind of, be exposed to American culture. And I would see that they would listen to the rappers, American rappers. They had the picture of American singers on the wall in their rooms. So really, I was, as an Iranian, I was shocked that there is so much influence, American influence in the day-to-day life of people in Iran. And I have to tell you that grassroots people in Iran are really very kind and hospitable. So this is a culture that they carried for thousands of years. So they would really, there is nothing to be afraid of. When you think of Iran or people in Iran, they really want to just make like anybody else, to make connection.
Is Iran a place that Americans visit?
I was very sad when I was in Tehran. I saw many tourists coming to Tehran and, seeing all these palaces that at one point belonged to Shah. But I didn't really encounter any American or Canadian, mostly European, Japanese, from China, from Asian countries and European. But unfortunately, I didn't encounter any American and Canadian. And it's unfortunate because I know how much Americans would enjoy the historical places in Iran. And hopefully at one point, those doors would be open to people who appreciate this kind of stuff,
Sure. Yeah. Ancient wonderfulness.
Yes, exactly.
89% of Iranians are members of the Twelver branch of Shia Islam. Was it different for you and your family because you were from a minority religion called Baha'i?
Yes, definitely it was. You know, as Baha'is, we are always dealt with as, you know, infidels, untouchable, unclean, subhuman. Just because, of course, I don't know how much the listener know about the Baha'i faith, but because the Baha'i faith came after religion of Islam. So, and because they are of the belief that His Holiness Muhammad is the last prophet of other religion, really. The Christian believe that Jesus is the last, and Jewish people, you know, it's in all the religion the same thing. So because the fact that Baha'i faith actually is after Islam, that really is a problem in Iran, because they consider us infidel for that reason alone. So we never had or enjoyed the same right of other citizens in Iran. Although we look Iranian, we were born in Iran, we spoke the same language, physically we are no different than anybody else, but we never enjoyed the same right. I mean, at the school, we were bothered by a student and teacher. The neighborhood, the neighbors wouldn't talk to us. They wouldn't eat at our home because they were under impression if they eat anything at our house, a cup of tea or food, we have mixed something to make them convert to our religion. So we had to deal with a lot of actually discrimination in Iran, even before revolution. But of course, after revolution, religion and politics became one, and the persecution of the Baha'is was much more prominent than it was in the time of Shah.
I was actually pretty surprised when I was doing a little research about Iran to see that really 99.5% of Iranians are Islamic. That's a huge total, you know, and half of 1% is everyone else, Jews, Christians, Baha'i, Zoroastrianism, and any other, which is a huge, tiny little itty-bitty minority.
Exactly. And, you know, that's why, you know, the discrimination is severe, because there is that much majority of people who, not every one of them, I have to tell you that there are Muslims who are so open-minded and truly they have understood the message of Muhammad, which is about peace and unity like any other religion. And for them, the human right and justice is so much more important. And they have stood by the side of the Baha'is and defended them. So I just want to make sure that there is no misunderstanding. Understanding when we talk about the issue of the Baha'is in Iran, we are attacking Islam or saying anything negative, God forbid, because our prophet actually was a Muslim, just as Jesus was Jew, you know. So yes, we have a lot of respect for Islam and for the teaching of that faith. And when I'm talking about the discrimination, really I'm referring to the fanatical people who you find it in any religion. But of course, unfortunately, in Iran, because of some of these people are uneducated and the percentage of those people are more, so you can see that the discrimination is severe. And because, of course, religion has become, you know, a politic of the land, so of course they have to uphold what they understood from Islam. So that's why we are dealing with a lot more persecution and execution of the Baha'is in Iran. It's just because of that. But I just wanted to make sure that it's clear that we are not talking about Islam, but we are talking about people who are fanatical, unfortunately.
I think that's lovely that you would make that distinction.
Yeah.
That's a problem in every religion.
Exactly.
Yes. And so I believe you're my first guest who is Baha'i, and I wondered if you would be willing to share some of the key beliefs of your faith so listeners might get a better picture of that.
For sure. You know, I just wanted to clarify this, that in Baha'i faith, we don't have priests or clergy, because we believe that unfortunately sometimes they are the cause of disunity, and sometimes they interpret the writing of the religion in a sense, in a way, to benefit themselves. So I'm talking here, if I'm giving you an introduction about the Baha'i faith, it's just a personal introduction. Sure. It's, I don't have any official, you know, position in the Baha'i faith. So I'm just, this is my personal understanding.
Understood.
And so I just wanted to clarify
okay.
that. Baha'i faith believes in oneness, three oneness. One is the oneness of God, oneness of religion, and oneness of human race. So oneness of God, it means that there is only one God. And in Baha'i faith, concept of God is this unknowable essence that as individual, we are not able to understand that essence. But of course, looking within ourselves and in nature and all around us, we see the sign of God. So that is really the concept. It is much deeper, but we don't have time to explain or prove the, you know, existence of God. But we believe in existence of God, that spiritual power or whatever we call it. But that, you know, a station of God, that there is only one God. We pray to the same God, and the same God created all of us and created all the religion that we believe in. The oneness of religion comes from the fact that the spiritual teaching of all the religion is the same, so it is changeless faith of God. Means that none of the religion have really come to promote disunity, war, you know, bloodshed. But the reason that God is sending time to time new prophet or teacher, whatever you want to call it, it's really not to renew the spiritual law. It's to renew the social, economical, and political law, which changes as human beings are maturing. So in a sense, we believe that all the religions are the chapter of the same book of God. And there is no distinction between any of the prophets. Nobody is higher or lower. They just have come to complement the history of religion. So one religion complements the other. It's just like grades in a school. You know, mm-hmm. you have to go to kindergarten, first grade. But at no time you can say that one teacher had more knowledge than the other. If the teacher in kindergarten just taught you alphabet, it didn't mean that that's her ability. It was our ability to just learn alphabet. So you cannot say that teacher didn't know anything and how come she didn't teach me how to read. It's because we were not able. So that's how we look at religion, and we believe that all the religion are the same. So this concept of progressive revelation is really revolutionary in history of religion, which we believe in that. And actually, Baha'u'llah, who is the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, and his name means glory of God, talks about the fact that, I was talking about the progressive revelation.
Yes.
He is talking about that actually his religion, the Baha'i faith that he brought, at least for 1,000 years, his teaching are applicable. And then after 1,000 years, we don't know if it is a year after 1,000 or 10 years after. We don't know. But he says then there might be a time for renewal of the religion, a new religion. So he is not telling us that he's the last. And actually, in a sense, I believe that it's really very selfish of any religion to think that they are the last religion, because how could you really prevent humanity from seeking more knowledge when you say this is it and this is the last? And we know that as human we have the capacity to learn more and explore more. How could one set of teaching be enough for humanity to the rest of the
yes We want it to be enlightening, but not limiting.
Exactly, yeah. Limiting. You know, so that, and then of course, oneness of humanity is very straightforward, that we believe that we all belong to the same human race. Human race. We don't believe in African race, Iranian race. We belong to a human race, and the global community is our common home. So this oneness of humanity comes from that. And actually, Baha'u'llah talks about that I have created you from the same stock, from the same thing. So nobody would say, oh, I'm better than the other people, because we are not. In the sight of God, we are judged by our character, not by where we come from or if we are female or male or yes. You are rich or poor or educated or not. Because in the end, we are judged by our action and our service to the community and advancing of the civilization. That's the criteria of the judgment, not other superficial, really material thing that we feel we so proud. I mean, those are necessary, but definitely those are not the only thing.
Well, it must speak to people in a universal way, because Baha'i is popular throughout the whole globe. And is it 700 million?
No, actually, we are not that many. I wish we were that many, because we could make a lot of changes.
I should never guess numbers. Big numbers.
No, but we are actually, no, we are only 7 million.
7 million?
Yes.
Okay.
You're right, 7. Oh. 7.
Never leave the numbers to me. You're listening to WMPG. And if you're just joining us, welcome. Today, my guest is Parivash Rohani. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining us. Parivash was originally from Iran, but left in 1979 to escape persecution for being Baha'i. She and her husband settled in Auburn, Maine, and raised their four children while working, practicing their faith, and building a strong community in the process. Can you tell us a little bit how you found Auburn to be as a hometown for raising a family?
Sure. You know, when we came to U.S., actually, we went to California, believe it or not, because I had an uncle who sponsored us. And as a refugee, if you had family who sponsored you, they would, you know, provide for you to stay with them, look for job. So we went to California, and we really didn't feel we want to live in California, because there was a huge Iranian community. Actually, they call Los Angeles Tehrangeles, because there are so many. There are about 1 million Iranians who live in California. But, you know, because of the belief in our faith that we belong to human family, we didn't want to live in isolation within U.S., and we thought, oh, we want to be somewhere that it is easier to assimilate into the community. And at the time, actually, my in-laws lived in New Brunswick, Fredericton in New Brunswick. So it was really very natural and very, you know, logical thing to do, to move to Maine. And of course, I fell in love, because I grew up in the northeast of Iran with the same climate. Ah. So that's how we end up in Auburn, Maine. We moved to Brunswick and then Auburn, yeah.
And are there other people in Auburn practicing Baha'i?
Yes, we have. Actually Baha'is all over Maine, but we are not a big community. Probably the most concentration of the Baha'is, I can say, in Portland, Lewiston, Elliott, Maine, Westbrook, South Portland. But in other cities, we do have Baha'is, but maybe one or two, like, isolated community.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you worked as an ICU nurse for most of your career. However, you have a passion for organizing, too. Can you tell us about what you're doing now since moving to Portland, Maine?
Yes, of course. You know, I... Actually, I didn't work most of my nursing career in ICU. I work in nursing home, skilled, hospice, different things. And then past 8, 9, I don't remember even. Yeah, probably about 10 years in ICU. And then when we moved to Portland, I just you know, to keep my license, I applied for jobs like medical screening jobs. And right now I'm volunteering for human rights campaign of education is not a crime campaign. And because of that, I have been traveling a lot, screening a film called To Light a Candle by Mazyar Bahari, who was an Iranian reporter, Canadian citizen, who also was in prison in Iran for being a reporter. And he did this To Light a Candle documentary. So I have been traveling with that. And, you know, just volunteering for different organizations and participating. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure I'm mentioning, I'm a moderator for the Empower the Immigrant Woman, which would be actually the conference will be in May 21st at USM. In Hannaford Hall, and it starts at 8 with registration till 1. And then in the afternoon at 5:30, the program actually starts with lots of celebration, honoring the honorees of the community. And I wanted to mention that it is a really community woman-driven event, kind of. And their mission is to empower, educate, and inspire the immigrant women. The conference actually is intended to motivate immigrant women in Maine to see this moment in history as an opportunity to come together on this platform to honor their community heroes. So this exciting event is for the first time bringing awareness of the work of a specific immigrant women in their respective communities in Maine as well as abroad. And I would like to actually mention Mufalo Chitam, with whose vision this conference has shaped. And any community really should be honored and proud of someone like her, who with absolute humbleness and pure intention has brought this vision into reality. She is a real leader, one that empowers others. Really, I'm so honored to be collaborating with her and with many African women who are amazing leaders, and they were in their own community, and to see them empower again through Mufalo Chitam and bring them to a spotlight, it was really such a thrilling experience for me. They really are amazing women.
Mufalo was on this show about a month ago, and I really enjoyed meeting her. She's from Zambia. And you're so right. She's modest. You know, she told about this conference, but it's hard to know how her thumbprints are on everything. And so thank you for featuring her in your description of that event. And if people want to learn more and go to this Empower Immigrant Women conference here at USM on the 21st of May, how might they do that? How might they find out more?
Yes, I think probably they could contact them, Mufalo Chitam, and I'm sure if they put Empower the Immigrant Woman Conference, they probably get the detail. There is a lot of publicity, and because it is in May 21st, I'm sure they would see more publicity in the newspaper and in the website. You know,
yes,
I'm sure that.
And so you're going to be a moderator for this event.
Yes, I'm one of the moderators.
Yeah, it's like you're a full-time organizer because you also just spoke at the Partners for World Health, showing the film you had discussed. You've been on Pecha Kucha. You help organize World Refugee Day. You also help organize help support this women's conference for empowering immigrant women. And tell us more about your role with Education is Not a Crime, the organization you're promoting changes within the Baha'i people of Iran.
Yes. You know, I have to give you a little background. I left in 79, and a few years after, I found out that almost about 16 of my friends from age 16 to my mentor, who was 56, were executed. So as you can imagine, that broke my heart and devastated, and I felt guilty that I left Iran and they were executed. So that wasn't a good feeling, but I carried that guilt with me for a lot of years, and I tried to really highlight their sacrifices in any way that I could. But about 7-8 years ago, when Amnesty International did a documentary on the persecution of the Baha'is and the fact that Baha'i youth cannot go for higher education in Iran based on their religion, and doesn't matter if they got the best mark in the national exam, it doesn't matter because of their faith, they couldn't go. It gave me tools. You know, I thought, oh, I found this tool that I can heal internally. And I felt that this is a time for me to take this project more seriously, you know, and do things with it. So I started calling different universities, libraries, some of them very helpful, some of them unfortunately not very helpful. I have gone through a lot of frustration with people who did not really feel it was important, but of course for me it is everything. So I have been doing that, and then the new phase of campaign is education is not a crime, and the documentary I mentioned was done by Maziar Bahari to light a candle. Actually, Maziar Bahari, many people know him because of Rosewater, the movie Rosewater, which was the story of his life. So he highlighted the persecution and also the fact that Baha'i youth cannot go for higher education. And the Baha'i community has built this university to provide for the Baha'i youth. And that also has been closed. The administrators are in prison. So right now, that university is an online university. And some of the professors are all over the globe who are not Baha'is. They don't get paid for anything they do. There are some Muslims teachers and instructors in Iran who are helping with the university. So really, it has it highlights all of these things, you know. So I have been showing that, and now the new phase of campaign is Paint the Change, which the Baha'i international community is calling on all the artists all over the globe to do artwork related to this. And actually, we are displaying from tomorrow in Woodbury campus near the cafeteria the art piece that was done for Paint the Change by a local main artist. So it would be displayed for a week in Woodbury campus.
Right,
so I encourage
USM.
People to come and see it. And if there are people who are out there who have artistic ability, please do help, you know, creating art piece to relay this information. And I think you are going to put the...
Yes. I was going to say, for people who are interested in Paint the Change, or the movie Education is Not a Crime and the movement behind it, I will put links on Parivash's webpage.
Thank you, Parivash.
You are a woman who is true to your mission. You passionately advocate for the human rights of voiceless people you've never met and yet you care deeply about. And you are a fabulous organizer right here in Maine, thinking globally, acting locally. So thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, and I wanted to congratulate you for the 100th episode of your program, and it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for making
a
difference in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest Parivash Rohani. Would you be so kind as to introduce the song you've chosen to end our program with today?
Sure. This song is actually by a singer called Behnam Rohani Fard, who was actually in a solitary confinement in Iran because of the lyric of his music. So I dedicate that to end the program with
Wonderful.
That.
Thank you. And it's called My Iran.
Yes, My Iran. In Persian, it is Iran Man. Yeah.
Thank you.
ایران زمین عشق و مهر و مهربانی ها، ایران زمین عاشقی ها بیقراری ها، ایران هزاران قصه دارد پرشر و شور است، هر گوشه آن جلوه گاه عالم نور است. ایران من، ایران من، ایران من، ایران، ایران من، ایران من، هرگز مشو ویران، مشو ویران. ایران همه گلها در او بوی وفا دارند، یادآور آزاد مردانی وفا دارند. ایران سراسر بیش زار عشق و ایمان است، آن خانه شیدایان روی جانان است. ایران من، ایران من، ایران من، ایران، ایران من، ایران من، هرگز نشو ویران، نشو ویران. سراسر بیش زار عشق و ایمان است، آن خانه شیدایان روی جانان است. ایران من، ایران من، ایران من، ایران، ایران من، ایران من، هرگز نشو ویران، نشو ویران، نشو ویران.